Hey guys, welcome to the Bitcoin Fortress podcast, helping you increase your financial freedom. This is episode 112, recorded here on April 21st, 2024. This podcast is for entertainment only, not investing advice. So, as always, please do your own homework. Well, we got plenty to cover this week, a big week for Bitcoin with the Bitcoin halving. And so we've got the market update outlook and then the top Bitcoin news. And then, inspired by a good friend, I'm going to start the FUD of the week, the most detestable thing I could find. I will read and I will comment on, and that'll be towards the end. And then we'll talk about this week's featured Substack post, and I will have some commentary on that since it was on a legislation that went through, just sailed right through. President signed it and everything, taking away our freedom. So we're going to talk about that towards the end. Jumping in with the market update, the benchmark S&P 500 closed out a tough five trading days on Friday with its worst weekly performance in over a year. The decline saw the index slip below the key 5,000 point level for the first time since late February. This week's retreat was driven by stronger than anticipated economic data, which, coupled with hawkish Fed speak, led market participants to dial back their interest rate cut expectations as they realized that the central bank is in no rush to ease monetary policy. Furthermore, geopolitical concerns over Israel and Iran, along with a stubborn bond sell-off, also put pressure on equities. Disappointing quarterly reports from Dutch semiconductor equipment maker ASML and the world's largest contract chip maker, Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing, pulled down chip stocks, dragging down the technology sector. For the week, the S&P dipped 3.1%. The tech-heavy Nasdaq Composite lost ground by 5.5%, and the blue-chip Dow eked out a slight gain of 0.01%. Looking ahead, all eyes next week will be on the latest U.S. personal income and outlays report due Friday. The data will also contain readings on the Federal Reserve's preferred inflation gauge, the Personal Consumption Expenditures Price Index. Also, Thursday we'll see the publication of the first estimate of U.S. GDP growth in Q1. Following this week's developments between Israel and Iran, market participants will likely continue to be on edge as they keep an eye on the situation in the Middle East. Treasury yields and oil will be on watch. Finally, the chunk of next week's spotlight will be dominated by the first quarter earnings season, which will heat up and see hundreds of companies announcing their numbers. The biggest names set to report include Mag 7 club members, Microsoft, Alphabet, Meta Platforms, and Tesla. Jumping into top Bitcoin news this week, I'm going to start with the week in review from Bitcoin.com. Some articles highlighted, a few of which we will probably go into more detail on. First one here is massive Bitcoin market turbulence triggers $4,500 crash, 167 million in BTC longs erased in 1 hour. The price of Bitcoin continued to decline over the weekend, dropping an additional 7.7% in the last 24 hours. It plummeted to a daily low of $61,384 per coin, prompting a significant wave of leverage liquidations on Saturday. Yes, every t and then also every time there's something going on between Israel and Iran, Bitcoin dumps. It's just interesting because the first time that happened, Bitcoin dumped a lot. The second time it happened, it dumped less, and then of course it recovered right away. So, lesson to the listener: just buy and hold in self-custody, cold storage. Don't use leverage. You'll get destroyed. It will happen. Next one here is an analyst predicts $650,000 Bitcoin price once ETF investors fully deploy asset manager recommendations. Popular on-chain analyst Willy Wu has predicted a potential Bitcoin price surge to $650,000 at the bull market's peak. I guess that's about 10x from here. His prediction hinges on spot Bitcoin exchange traded fund investors fully deploying their assets based on recommendations from asset managers. These are very conservative numbers. Bitcoin will beat gold cap when ETFs have completed their role, he stressed. Well, we'll see. Robert Kiyosaki explains why he won't buy the Bitcoin ETF, which is, by the way, a smart move. Rich Dad Poor Dad author Robert Kiyosaki has explained why he won't invest in a spot Bitcoin exchange traded fund. Just as I own gold and silver coins and mines and own apartment houses, I do not own gold or silver ETFs, he stressed. The famous author stated this week that he believes the price of Bitcoin will reach $2.3 million. Former BitMEX chief expects crypto prices to slump around the Bitcoin halving. Former BitMEX CEO Arthur Hayes has explained why he believes that Bitcoin and crypto prices in general will slump around the halving. He added that from now until May 1st, he will be in a no-trade zone, emphasizing that April will experience extreme weakness in risky asset markets. Okay. Next article is from Cointelegraph, and this was posted yesterday. Article's entitled, Bitcoin Halving 2024, Done and Dusted. And obviously, that's the big news of the week. Bitcoin has successfully gone through its fourth ever halving event. And by the way, for those of you who don't know this, most of you do, so forgive me if I'm going through something that you already know. But the halving simply means that the mining reward for a miner who successfully completes a block gets cut in half. So it was 6.25, and now it's going down to 3.125. And that's programmed in the code, and it's based on a certain number of blocks. I think it's 240,000 or something blocks. Or sorry, 210,000 blocks mined. So the next halving will be at the 1,050,000th block, which will be in about 4 years. And that's when it'll get cut in half again. What's interesting, and so that's the halving, and then so the miners get less, which then reduces the amount of new Bitcoin supply that goes out into the market. So all things being equal, if the demand stays the same, then the price goes up. What's interesting about this halving event is that the current issuance rate now is actually less than the how much gold is produced every year. So since the last halving, it was like on par, about the same as gold. Now it's actually half as scarce as gold in terms of new supply, which makes it harder than gold, which is pretty cool. Anyway, so that's the halving. So back to the article. Bitcoin has successfully gone through its fourth ever halving event after posting its 840,000th block, the point at which mining rewards are slashed in half once again. The event has the crypto community eagerly awaiting what's next for Bitcoin's price, with some predictions reaching as high as $250,000. And we talk about price a little bit here, but who knows? Who cares? You've got the hardest money known to mankind. It's just be patient, and over time, it's going to be. You'll be happy. You'll be able to buy whatever you want in the future. You'll have the same purchasing power as you have today, at least, if not more. At the time of publication, Bitcoin's price is $63,960, up 1.16% over the past 24 hours per CoinMarketCap data. From today onwards, Bitcoin miners will receive 3.125 Bitcoin per mined block, down from the previous 6.25 Bitcoin. It is a program process in the Bitcoin protocol that happens every 210,000 blocks mined, as we mentioned earlier, which equates to roughly every 4 years. The last three halvings occurred in 2012, 2016, and 2020, leading to significant drops in mining rewards over time. The first Bitcoin halving occurred in 2012 when the reward for mining a block was reduced from 50 to 25 Bitcoin. The main purpose behind the Bitcoin halving is to manage scarcity and regulate the inflationary supply of Bitcoin. The mechanism was built into the code by Bitcoin's pseudonymous founder operating under the name of Satoshi Nakamoto. By cutting mining rewards in half, this process effectively slows down the rate at which new Bitcoin is created. The system will continue until roughly 2140 when all Bitcoin is mined. Major Bitcoin miners have been getting ready for the event. Marathon Digital recently announced its plans to acquire a 200 megawatt Bitcoin mining facility in Texas for $87.3 million. Meanwhile, in December 2023, competitor Bitcoin mining firm Riot Platforms purchased 66,560 mining rigs from manufacturer MicroBT in one of the largest expansions of hash rate in the firm's history. M2 CEO Stefan Kimmel told Cointelegraph, "The Bitcoin halving is a pivotal event that historically signals a shift in the market, usually initiating a bullish trend over the following months. As we approached the fourth halving, the anticipation built, suggesting a continued, if slightly more subdued, upward trajectory." Despite short-term predictions of price volatility within the crypto community, there remains optimism about the long-term potential of Bitcoin's price. Speaking to Cointelegraph, billionaire investor Tim Draper believes that the halving is going to help push Bitcoin's price up to $250,000 or more, a forecast he has consistently proclaimed, particularly in 2022. The simple reason that Bitcoin price goes up after a halving is that the supply goes down, and with continued upward pressure on demand, the price goes up naturally in a free market. Meanwhile, Herbert Sim, aka Bitcoin Man, told Cointelegraph that there are currently other elements at play when speculating over Bitcoin's price. Halving is not the only thing to look out for in the price action, he declared, indicating that the recent approval of the Bitcoin ETF in Hong Kong will also potentially have a major price impact. The big banks of China will all have to start buying Bitcoin themselves too, Sim stated. And there's also a lot of high net worth individuals there that might want to put some of their money there. So that will be interesting. Next up is from CoinDesk. And this article was posted on April 19th. Runes protocol launches on Bitcoin, sending fees soaring as users rush to mint tokens. So the reason why I'm talking about this, I don't really like shitcoins, and even shitcoins on Bitcoin, I don't really like. But a lot of people were surprised that even though the mining fee got cut in half, like we talked about earlier, that the total fees that miners were getting in the halving block and then thereafter, actually for several blocks thereafter, the mining fees were insane. So what gives? Miners are, of course, very happy to collect extra Bitcoins for mining blocks. Well, here's your explainer. Despite this being the most anticipated Bitcoin halving yet, at least according to Google search history, it was the launch of the high-profile Bitcoin builder Casey Rotemor's latest creation, Runes, that turned heads, even among longtime blockchain developers who despise the digital tokens that can be minted on the platform. Rotemor is known for the release of Ordinals, a protocol that allows people to inscribe data on the smallest units of Bitcoin, i.e., Satoshis, to create highly valued assets on Bitcoin. Ordinals is largely credited for inspiring a renewed developer ecosystem on Bitcoin. Runes is similar to Ordinals in that it allows people to etch and mint tokens on chain. The main difference is that Ordinals are non-fungible, i.e., one of a kind, while Runes will function more like meme coins, which have recently taken crypto markets by storm. The first Runes project to mint was Rotemor's own Uncommon Goods project, which was announced well in advance of the halving, as were many of the projects looking to etch themselves on these highly coveted Satoshis. Impossible to know in advance, however, is what other projects would be able to find space on these scarce Satoshis. There are already quite literally hundreds of Runes projects that are currently being minted and looking for prospective buyers. About 9 blocks after the halving, Runes minters had already paid 78.6 Bitcoin in fees, or about $4.95 million, in order to buy the rarest of the rare. This suggests that, like ordinals, the Runes protocol would be a boon to Bitcoin's burgeoning fee economy. And that, I would say, is an understatement. What makes Runes project potentially viable is something of a subjective measure, being an early project to list, like Dog Go to the Moon, which has the honor of being rune number 3, is one measure, but buyers are also judging projects based on the quality of its ticker. A number of Runes projects were already starting to mint before the halving happened, including Dog 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 Dog, Meme Economics, Short the World, and Pepe Wit Honkers, including dozens of others, according to Prior, this is just ridiculous. Prior to the halving block being mined, prospective buyers in an X space hosted by Leonidas, a well-regarded ordinals collector, is that even a thing? Users and speculators alike were discussing which runes to mint and trading ticker names. Among the names dropped were Taproot Wizards, the ordinals project co-created by Bitcoin OG influencers Eric Wall and Udi Wertheimer, and a project called Satoshi Nakamoto, named after Bitcoin's creator, which at press time had over 5,000 holders who minted about 19,000 tokens. Which projects will actually prove to have long-term value is hard to judge. Yeah, I don't see any good memes. Like, I mean, I'm just trying to figure it out, one trader said. To be quite frank, I haven't minted anything yet. I'm trying to understand the space in general right now. Someone else responded, these projects are like early runes. Do you guys think that these are actually going to be the most valuable ones? I think it depends on what happens with them, someone responded. Another aspect to consider, how many of the tokens were pre-mined or held in reserve for project creators to potentially release on the market later. Prior to the halving, Leonidas shared guidelines that suggested projects that pre-mine more than 10% of the token supply were greedy. Again, this is shit coining. I think the pre-mines are going to be the ones that win, one trader said, because like it's so hard to come up with a good meme with a 13-character limit, he said, referring to the hard-coded naming system Rotomore added to runes to try to prevent ticker squatters. In time, runes tickers will be able to list with shorter names. Within 3 years, there could be runes projects with 3-letter tickers, for instance. Though it's unclear how well the strategy will play out, according to data source Ortiscan, one forward-thinking developer has already blocked off a series of tickers, including ZZZZ, which will be the first 4-letter rune to mint in 2 years, ZZ and Z, the first 2-letter and 1-letter runes to mint in 3 years, and A, the last single character rune to mint in 4 years. In other words, with something so new, it's hard to determine what to value. As everybody's scrambling to figure out what the hell's going on, I want to just take a moment to say it's awesome being here with all of you, Leonidas told his audience. This is essentially the start of a new protocol that kicked off about 30 minutes ago, so let's see what happens. I think it's going to be very chaotic. Okay, so I don't like shit coins. I really don't like shit coins on Bitcoin. But gamblers are going to gamble. Bitcoin is an open source protocol. It's freedom of speech. It's a pure free market. Your enemies and friends and frenemies alike get to use it, and they can use it however they want, and it might not be in ways that you like. So as long as it drives development and as long as it drives adoption of Bitcoin and perhaps pulls things away from Ethereum, which is total garbage and centralized. It's not, I'm not going to say it's not a bad thing, but it's not a totally bad thing, I guess. So that's my take on runes. And of course, it's great for the miners because they're making more money now than they were. I mean, that's going to die off in time, but they were making a lot of money minting tokens. for these guys in these blocks. So, but not for me. I just prefer to own Bitcoin in cold storage. Thank you very much. No shitcoining for me. Next article is from Crypto Potato. This was posted on April 19th. Article's entitled, "Here's Why Bitcoin Will Not Stop at 100K," Arthur Hayes, live from Token 2049. While talking about the monetary policies undertaken by the US government, as well as other economic giants like China and Japan, BitMEX's co-founder Arthur Hayes highlighted Bitcoin as the only suitable solution in times of expanding central bank balance sheets. He made these comments during the current Token 2049 conference in Dubai. Hayes began by asserting that the real yields will continue to be negative, which is something the US Fed and Treasury are actively managing to maintain. This is because they are allowed to borrow funds at lower rates. Should that trend continue, which has been the case for the past few decades, Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies will keep increasing in value, said the former BitMEX exec. However, he also warned about the opposite, but said there's very little chance the real yields will go positive anytime soon. He believes that the GDP numbers claimed by the US and other governments are artificial and are announced to the public to keep them at bay. The solution for this fiat monetary policy lies outside of it, he noted. Hayes highlighted gold as the historical choice, given that it has existed for thousands of years. He said the yellow metal has served its purpose for a long time, but it has numerous drawbacks that are bypassed by owning an asset that has all of its merits without any of the potential negative sides, Bitcoin. As seen in his presentation, gold is hard to carry, especially in large amounts, while Bitcoin is digital. History has seen numerous examples where the government has seized gold holdings, and this can't happen to Bitcoin, which exists in the digital world. Given his prediction about the US monetary policy remaining the same, Hayes said people should turn to Bitcoin and not be deterred by the recent gains. They should not leave the market just because their positions are up 200% in the past several months. He believes Bitcoin's price will keep going and will not stop at 100K. He's made some quite bullish predictions in the past, including a $750,000 price tag for Bitcoin in the next couple of years. So he's very bullish, and real yields look to be positive, but I think in reality they're not because the inflation numbers are cooked. So the actual rate of inflation is actually higher than whatever's being paid on the short term now. It's about 5%. You're probably looking at realistically 6% inflation or 7% for real versus the 3 or 4% that's being reported. So that's where he's coming from on that, which I agree with. Next article is from bitcoinnews.com. This was posted today. More price predictions. Bitwise CIO expects substantial price rally for Bitcoin post-halving. The Bitcoin halving, a scheduled event occurring roughly every 4 years, has garnered significant attention from investors and analysts alike. Its fourth event happened on Friday. Bitwise Chief Investment Officer Matt Haugen stated his thoughts on the matter in a series of posts on X and during an interview with CNBC. According to Bitwise CIO Matt Haugen, the Bitcoin halving presents a buy-the-news opportunity for investors. Oh, it's not a sell-the-news event. Drawing from historical data, Haugen suggests that while immediate price action post-halving may be relatively muted, the long-term outlook remains bullish. He notes that after each of the past three halvings, Bitcoin prices have rallied substantially, indicating the potential for a similar trend this time around. If you look historically at halvings, the price action within a week or two after the Bitcoin halving is relatively muted. But if you look out a year, BTC prices have rallied substantially after each of the past three halvings, and I think it will do so again. Haugen emphasizes the significance of the halving in reducing the supply of new Bitcoin, stating the amount of new supply of Bitcoin coming into the market is being cut in half. We're removing $11 billion of annual supply. I think big picture, that has to be good for the price, and that's what I would expect over the next year. This reduction in supply, coupled with increasing demand through spot Bitcoin ETFs, could drive prices higher in the coming months. He noted, "That's why I find the halving bullish. I think the market has underestimated the long-term demand for Bitcoin, and I like the idea of that excess demand having to chase Bitcoin almost exclusively from people who don't need to sell." In other words, the miners have to sell because that's their business. The people that are HODLing Bitcoin don't need to sell unless they want to. The Bitcoin halving event, designed to reduce the supply of new Bitcoin entering circulation, is often seen as a pivotal moment in the Bitcoin market. Notably, the fourth halving event went through on Friday, effective cutting the new Bitcoin awarded per block from 6.25 to 3.125. Despite these views, some are convinced that the halving is already priced in. Analysts seem to be divided on this, as not everyone thinks this way. Haugen raises doubts about whether current prices accurately reflect future demand for Bitcoin. He argues that while the halving itself is well known and accounted for, market participants may not have fully anticipated the potential increase in demand post-halving. Haugen challenges the efficient markets hypothesis, which suggests that asset prices reflect all available information. He points out that while the EMH accounts for anticipated supply cuts from the halving, it may overlook unexpected shifts of market demand. The halving is well known, so today's price reflects that it will occur. But what if future demand for Bitcoin is higher than the market currently anticipates? He asks. Haugen wrote, "I think this is broadly true. What the EMH folks leave out, however, is that current prices only reflect the market's best guess of future demand for Bitcoin. One factor contributing to uncertainty surrounding post-halving market dynamics is the balance between forced and willing sellers in the Bitcoin ecosystem. Before the halving, miners who face high operational costs are the primary forced sellers of Bitcoin. However, after the halving, their share of daily sell pressure is expected to decrease significantly. This shift could result in a greater proportion of willing sellers who are typically long-term holders of Bitcoin." According to Haugen, this dynamic could create significant upward price pressure if market demand exceeds expectations. As the Bitcoin community watches closely for price changes after the fourth halving, experts remain divided on its potential impact on prices and market dynamics. While some believe that the halving has been fully priced in and anticipate a sideways trend, others caution that the market may not have adequately accounted for future demand. Regardless, the Bitcoin halving continues to be a significant event in the Bitcoin world with the potential to shape markets trends for years to come. And here's another take. The price of assets just goes up in dollar terms. Why is that? Because the dollar is being printed and it's being devalued and debased. And that is what is not priced in, because nobody really even understands that. All you see is how it manifests in the real world. For example, my house, which I bought in 2006, is now quite old, needs a little bit of work. You would think it would be worth less, and not 100% more than I paid for it. It's ridiculous, and that's unfortunately what's happening in the real world, and that's why people can't afford to buy a house, because house prices just keep going up, not because houses are worth more or that they're better. I would argue they're worse as they get older, right? Plumbing goes bad, electrical goes bad, you have to keep renovating. Oh, it's time to replace the carpet, it's time to remodel, whatever. The roof needs to be replaced, you know. It just goes on and on. So why is the house doubling in, you know, this period of time? It's because the dollar is going down. And like they say, the Bitcoin has no top because fiat has no bottom. So you can decide for yourself whether that's priced in or not, but I'll take my chances with Bitcoin. Okay, next article is from Bitcoin.com. This was posted yesterday. Article's entitled "IRS Releases Draft Tax Form for Digital Assets. Expert Raises Major Privacy and Security Concerns." Well, here we go again. The U.S. Internal Revenue Service launched the much-anticipated draft tax form for reporting digital asset transactions on Thursday, applicable for tax filings in 2025. The form, known as 1099-DA for reporting digital asset proceeds from broker transactions, per the instructions on the form for recipients, brokers must report proceeds from, and in some cases, basis for, digital asset dispositions to taxpayers and the IRS using Form 1099-DA. Brokers filling out the form must specify whether they are a kiosk operator, digital asset payment processor, hosted wallet provider, unhosted wallet provider, or other digital asset filer. The form also notes if you filed a Form 1099-DA, you generally sold, exchanged, otherwise disposed of a financial interest in a digital asset, and should check the yes box next to the question on page one of Form 1040. Sheehan Chandrasekara, head of tax strategy at crypto tax firm Cointracker, shared his thoughts about the new IRS tax form on Friday. He wrote on social media platform X, "I don't think crypto will be pseudo-anonymous or privacy-preserving anymore, at least in the U.S." Chandrasekara described the 1099-DA form as the first tax form specifically designed to collect your ID and detailed transaction data at scale from brokers. He explained that centralized exchanges, certain decentralized exchanges, and wallets will be required to generate this form for each sale transaction and submit that info to the IRS and you, similar to stockbrokers, starting January 1st, 2025. While noting that the 1099-DA form captures unsurprising data points such as date acquired, date sold, proceeds, and cost basis of crypto assets sold, he stressed, however, the collection and reporting of the following additional data points, especially wallet addresses to the IRS at scale, could lead to major privacy and security concerns. Regarding sales-based data points, Chandrasekara detailed that the IRS requires information for each transaction, including the sale transaction ID, the digital asset address from which the units were sold, and the number of units sold. For transfer-related data points, he said the tax authority requires the declaration of the transfer-in transaction ID number, the transfer-in digital asset address, and the number of units transferred in. Highlighting that in the new draft form 1099-DA, the IRS has included unhosted wallet provider as a checkbox. He stressed, "This further signals the IRS's intention to include unhosted wallets under the broker definition despite the industry feedback." He additionally explained that what this new IRS form means going forward, you will likely have to provide KYC information before creating an unhosted wallet and/or when interacting with platforms via unhosted wallets. This could drastically change how users interact with crypto platforms," Chandrasekara continued, adding that it will change decentralized finance as we know it today. Well, not shocking at all. I mean, the IRS wants they want their tax revenue, and if you're gonna sell your Bitcoin or you're gonna pay your taxes, by golly. So, yeah, I guess if you don't like it, you can always move to El Salvador or somewhere else that doesn't tax Bitcoin. But that's the reality in the US. And putting all the digital addresses, giving that to the IRS is really just doesn't feel good at all. Next article here is from bitcoinnews.com. And this was posted today. Human Rights Foundation launches Finney Freedom Prize. On the occasion of the fourth Bitcoin halving, the Human Rights Foundation has unveiled a groundbreaking initiative, the Finney Freedom Prize. This prestigious award aims to recognize individuals and organizations that make significant contributions to Bitcoin and human rights. Named after Hal Finney, an early advocate of Bitcoin, the prize celebrates his vision of using technology for liberation. Hal Finney, a re renowned civil liberties advocate and electronic cash pioneer, played a pivotal role in the early development of Bitcoin. recognizing his historic contributions during Bitcoin's first halving era from 2009 to 2012, the inaugural Finney Freedom Prize has been posthumously awarded to him. Fran Finney, Hal's widow, expressed gratitude for the recognition, stating, "We believe this prize will ensure Hal's legacy endures, inspiring future generations to explore and expand the use of Bitcoin as a tool for achieving personal and collective freedom." The Finney Freedom Prize aims to inspire individuals to utilize Bitcoin for advancing human rights and economic liberation globally. Alex Gladstein, HRF's chief strategy officer, emphasized the significance of the prize in promoting Bitcoin's potential for empowering individuals. He stated, "We wanted to help inspire people to use Bitcoin to advance human rights, to help more people achieve economic liberation around the world, and we thought that creating a prize that could be persistent throughout the early life cycle of Bitcoin would be one way to do it." He expressed admiration for Hal Finney's contributions to Bitcoin, emphasizing his dedication to coding and how he continued to contribute until his final days. He highlighted the significance of the halving event and announced the establishment of the Finney Freedom Prize in honor of Hal Finney, aimed at promoting digital privacy and freedom. Gladstein drew parallels between the Finney Freedom Prize and the Nobel Prizes, hoping it would inspire future generations in the realm of Bitcoin. The selection process for the Finney Freedom Prize involves a meticulous evaluation by the Genesis Committee, comprising notable figures from the Bitcoin community, including Farida Naburima, founder of Africa Bitcoin Conference, Lisa Nygut, co-founder of Base 58, lead organizer at Bitcoin++, Obi Nwosu, founder and CEO at Fedi, board member at BTrust, Ross Stevens, founder and CEO of Stone Ridge Asset Management, Aaron Von Werdum, cypherpunk historian, author of the Genesis book, Vitus Zeller, co-founder of Running Bitcoin, and Gloria Zhao, Bitcoin Core developer. The committee evaluates candidates based on various criteria. These include educating large audiences about Bitcoin, demonstrating financial freedom through Bitcoin, contributing to Bitcoin's code base, promoting decentralization, and enhancing accessibility, especially in authoritarian regimes. Some speculate that Hal Finney could be Satoshi Nakamoto or part of a collaborative effort. However, Bitcoin pioneer Jameson Lopp argues otherwise. His analysis suggests Finney's absence during Satoshi's online presence is a hard evidence against that claim. Moreover, Finney explicitly refuted claims of being Satoshi Nakamoto. During a period when the U.S. government aimed to restrict public access to robust encryption, Hal Finney corresponded with a community of cryptographers. He wrote, "The work we are doing here, broadly speaking, is dedicated to this goal of making Big Brother obsolete." Finney was an advocate of cryptography and open source coding. In a blog post on Less Wrong in 2009, Finney penned, "My dream is to contribute to open source software projects even from within an immobile body." The Finney Freedom Prize will be awarded every 4 years on subsequent Bitcoin halving days, totaling 28 awards over the next 110 years. Each laureate will receive a monetary prize of one Bitcoin and a physical award. The initiative is supported by a 32 Bitcoin fund established by HRF to ensure the prize's sustainability. Additionally, Fran Finney has directed Hal's prize to be donated to charity, furthering his commitment to humanitarian causes. She said, "Hal would have been thrilled to see how this Bitcoin ecosystem has grown and to learn that this once obscure software project is now used by tens of millions of people worldwide. He would be honored to be the first recipient of this award and humbled to have it be in his name. I feel great privilege and responsibility in accepting the first prize on his behalf." The establishment of the Finney Freedom Prize marks a significant milestone at the intersection of Bitcoin and human rights advocacy. By recognizing individuals and organizations that champion these principles, the prize aims to inspire a new generation of activists and innovators. As Gladstein aptly describes it, "We want people to be inspired to be like Hal, to think about more than themselves and about expanding this tool so that it can be accessible to more people." In commemorating the legacy of Hal Finney, the Finney Freedom Prize embodies the spirit of innovation and activism at the heart of the Bitcoin movement. with its long-term commitment to honoring those who advance Bitcoin and human rights. The prize sets a precedent for future generations to continue the pursuit of freedom and empowerment through technology. So very, very wonderful news there. Okay, now FUD of the week. This is from Bitcoin.com. This was posted 14 hours ago. I'm going to try to read this and not get angry. JP Morgan CEO Jamie Dimon. Bitcoin is a fraud. There's no hope for Bitcoin as a currency. The chief executive of JP Morgan Chase, Jamie Dimon, has not changed his mind about Bitcoin. The executive still insists that the cryptocurrency is a fraud. In an interview with Bloomberg aired on Wednesday, he said, "Crypto like Bitcoin, I've always said it's a fraud." When asked whether there's hope for crypto, Dimon replied, "If they think they are a currency, there's no hope for it. It's a Ponzi scheme." However, he continued, "If it's a crypto coin that can do something like, you know, a smart contract that has value, there will be smart contracts and blockchain works. To the extent crypto accesses certain blockchain things, yeah, that might have some value." Tokenization of the world, of course. Let's keep financializing real estate and, you know, rainforests and all that. I'm sure there's money to be made by the banksters, so they would be 100% behind that. But not Bitcoin, no. Nobody uses it anyway. Dimon has been a vocal critic of Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies overall. In March, the CEO of JP Morgan Chase affirmed that he will never personally invest in Bitcoin, which is great. Good. He has compared Bitcoin to a pet rock and frequently stated that the cryptocurrency's actual use cases are sex trafficking, tax evasion, money laundering, and terrorism financing. During a Senate hearing, he remarked that if he were the government, he would shut down cryptocurrency. In January, he said, "My personal advice is don't get involved, but I don't want to tell anyone what to do. It's a free country." While maintaining his anti-Bitcoin stance, Dimon acknowledged his clients' interest in the cryptocurrency and supported their freedom to invest. His investment bank is an authorized participant for BlackRock's Spot Bitcoin Exchange Traded Fund, the iShares Bitcoin Trust. Well, let's talk about what the Ponzi scheme is. The real Ponzi scheme, and the one that JP Morgan is complicit in, because let's not forget who the owners of the Federal Reserve are. It's not the government, it's the banks. So the banks are on the board of the Federal Reserve, they control it. Federal Reserve is supposed to regulate the banks. And what does the Federal Reserve do? It prints money in unlimited quantities. And that's why, like I talked earlier, why my house has doubled, even though functionally it's probably should have gone down in value. It's because the asset isn't going up in value. The currency is decreasing in value. That's what's happening. That's why every asset you look at, especially gold now, but Bitcoin, everything else, it's because the dollar is becoming worthless. That's a Ponzi scheme. And it can't go on forever. You know, they can't keep borrowing and, you know, having the interest go parabolic, have the debt go parabolic. At some point, they're going to have to reset. And that's when you'll know that it's that the fiat monetary system is the real Ponzi. So he's got to stick to his script. He's not in even, I mean, he really thinks Bitcoin is useless, but there are a lot of people in a lot of countries throughout the world that their fiat system is in way, way, way worse shape than the US, and they've discovered Bitcoin and they're using Bitcoin to preserve their wealth, to transact with others peer-to-peer without any intermediary. They don't even need a bank account. Lightning is better. It's a lot cheaper, especially when fees are high on the network like they are or have been recently because of this whole Runes debacle, which is, again, what a lot of the human rights folks were getting upset about, is that, you know, it becomes prohibitively expensive to transact on the base chain when there's all this high fee environment. But again, that is a will continue to drive Lightning Network adoption and other second layer solutions where there's trade-offs. There's trade-offs for, security primarily. Maybe you get some better privacy, but you get lower fees. And so yeah, he's completely full of shit. But he's talking his book because he is part of the biggest Ponzi scheme ever. So he's going to keep coming out with this kind of stuff. And if you trust the banksters, then I don't know what to say. You're in trouble. Then last but not least, I did want to mention this week's Bitcoin Fortress newsletter post entitled RISAA expands the surveillance state. Time to call your senator again. This is about the Reforming Intelligence and Securing America Act, which there's a lot of debate over constitutional rights. They were arguing that this is a sort of improvement of the Section 702 of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act to sort of safeguard U.S. citizens from getting pulled into this dragnet when they're investigating foreign players. But then they've added a lot of additional stuff to it that people are concerned about, like basically turning anybody that has a Wi-Fi, except for certain limited exceptions, into a spy for the government if you've done any kind of type of communication across that particular network. And of course, that just went right through the House, and it was in the Senate. Senate approved it, and the president signed it into law. So it's done. So there's really not much more to talk about it, other than to say that it's another piece in the puzzle of many, many legislations over many years, which I wrote about in a past post. And again, there's links to this in the show notes, where you take this beautiful document called the U.S. Constitution, and you just destroy it over many, many years by taking away freedom and liberty of the individual for the sake of safety and protection from the bad guys. And the bad guys are always there, and they change. Sometimes they're terrorists, sometimes they're child traffickers, sometimes they're criminals. The real criminals are the people that are taking away individual rights, is my opinion. But anyway, check it out. And there's a link, like I said, in the show notes to that. And with that, thanks for listening to the podcast. If you enjoyed the show, please like and leave a comment. Don't forget to subscribe on your favorite podcast app so you don't miss an episode. I do like Fountain, where I can earn some sats for listening to all my favorite podcasts. You can follow my Substack. It's at bitcoinfortress.substack.com. You can get a free subscription, and I post pretty much everything free anyway. But if you like and want to support, you can get a paid subscription. And you can follow me on Nostr. My EnPub is included in the show notes, so please check me out there. I'm not on any other social media. Love Nostr. It's freedom technology, uncensorable. And with that, I will talk to y'all next week. Bye bye.